Yo, it's Cree. This is the Vibin' with Cree podcast. And we're back with another raw episode. Cindy Sobielski is someone that I also had the pleasure of interviewing at the Freedom Fest International in its first year. And she was such an amazing person to talk to. Has a number of credentials and a number of successes and a lot of great perspectives to share, and you should just stay tuned and learn something.
Okay, so great. So where are you from?
New York.
Yeah,
New York City.
So what parts did you live in?
I lived in Manhattan for most of my life since I was a teenager, but then I am now in Brooklyn, in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, which is Spike Lee's neighborhood. So it's really culturally rich. It's ethnically diverse, it's racially diverse, it's age diverse, and it's also socioeconomically diverse. So you get a bunch of cultures really in a melting pot. So it's a very special place to be right now.
Wow. So how much did that have an influence on the work you do?
I think everything has an influence on the work I do, subconsciously, if not anything else.
Right.
But one thing that I noticed is when I was living in Manhattan for most of my life, I was in the very white queer theater bubble. So the people I was around and the shows I was doing were so much in that, just because that's kind of, I was in Greenwich Village and that was that. I came from a theater and musical theater background. So that was what the world was to me. Mm. And then doubling the rent, moving to Brooklyn.
Doubling the rent.
Right. Changed things. And then it just opened my world a little. And you know, I've always been into different cultures and expressions, but my big show right now is called Drumstruck, and they're from South Africa. So it's a drum and dance company where everybody in the audience gets a drum, and we played Dollywood this year, where, you know, that's in Tennessee, and you're seeing all of these people who have not really encountered authentic Africa getting a real African experience, and everybody, 1,000 people playing drums together.
Wow.
Really magical, yeah.
So what cities has that taken place already?
Well, that's now taken place. We just did the month-long in Dollywood, and that was our inaugural U.S. outside of the Off-Broadway for 2 years, 2005 and 8, but they've never actually done, they've toured Japan for 10 years, all over Australia, some in Europe, all over Asia, all over Africa, but never really the U.S. So now we're working on a spring 2020 and a fall 2020 tour. So because it worked, because the sort of test pilot of the U.S. worked, and that there's a hunger for that kind of thing right now, I'm happy to say it's working out and we're planning a big tour.
Wow. So you're thinking starting off with 15, 20 cities, or like,
well, as many as we can.
As many as you can. Okay. Really dope. I really love to hear, you know, all about kosher. You know,
yeah.
Especially in the U.S. We need it so bad here.
Well, yeah. That's actually part of the exciting thing of coming to the South, bringing something that, you know, these guys are so well-traveled. Like, it's almost embarrassing for somebody rather well-traveled and global. They're just like, oh yeah, well in India, well in Japan, well in France, well in Amsterdam. They have been everywhere, and then they come to Tennessee, where a lot of the people there don't leave their few mile radius even. So you know, a lot of the attendees at Dollywood were real locals who have never gone on an international flight, some not even on a flight.
Right.
And so bringing that culture to people is great. And I think film is a wonderful way to do that, sometimes more easily, because it can tend to be a little bit more accessible.
Yes. Yes. That's great. And that's a great way to transition to my next question.
Excellent.
I see that you have, let me see, producer, journalist, marketing director, and what in your film, so your entertainment business, is it like an umbrella of things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a full service entertainment company, kind of based on things. I tend to do more live entertainment.
Okay.
But the journalism has really given me a freedom. You know, you know this as a writer, to serve other communities that I'm not directly involved in. So okay. I began as an actress, and this is both on stage and screen. So I've been in indie films myself, awesome. You know, getting out of university, of musical theater university, there weren't that many roles right away. So a lot of the auditions would be for indie films and you're building a reel. And so I got that experience, and I actually stopped working in film because I hated it so much, because being a under five or something, the 16-hour days to say five lines that would be cut was just kind of obnoxious. But I think what's cool about the indie film scene is, instead of somebody doing something like that, those performers are taking it into their own hands, creating films to tell the stories that they want to tell. Mm. And, you know, I felt I had more influence and ability to give back and to have a career as a director than as a producer in theater. And then as a journalist, it's almost something even higher, because as a performer, I felt limited. I'm limited by my gender, my body, my my race, my age, my whatever, my height, you know, anything. And then as my talent, I'm not the best singer, I'm not the best dancer in the world. So you have these limitations as a producer. I put the best from Africa, from Asia, from the Middle East on stage and bring them over here and bring the best from here over there. Mm. And as a journalist, there's not even a genre. Mm. So So if you are wide range in your interests and your ability to research and your ability to have these conversations, then, you know, I write about film, I write about theater, I write about travel, basically anything that is arts and cultural. And it was the Hip Hop Film Festival in Harlem where I met Andrew.
Really?
Yeah, wow. This was last year. And it was much like this festival, very diverse, a lot of different offerings. But what's fascinating to me about indie film and the voices in it, it's very similar, this film festival, to that one, in that the stories being told by indie filmmakers tend to be extremely topical.
Topical.
Yeah, so okay. they're very much about today's issues, whereas
today's issues.
Okay. A lot of larger, big budget films will be based around, you know, major themes or obvious stories, you know, the Marvels, the heroes, things, typical love story or something. But I found that at least in that festival, which was around this time last year, and this festival, the filmmakers are talking a lot about race. They're talking about gun violence. They're talking about domestic violence. And it seems to, they're talking about terrorism. They're talking about things that Americans are fearful of now, are wanting to express, are concerned about. So instead of these broader themes that might be more appealing to others, people are telling more intimate stories. But it seems to be almost like they're the same themes. You'd say, oh, this is curated to be, wow, there were so many films in that last short film section about domestic violence or about race relations. And you say, well, what was that intentional? No, it's that's a big deal right now. And we're in the South, and that's problematic. And in the Hip Hop Film Festival, you know, that was in Harlem, but they're coming from all over the U.S. And it seems to be that the indie filmmakers are really trying to express the topical stories of what's happening now in America. Yeah, the voice of the people, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
The voice of the people. Mm-hmm.
That's great, because I was going to ask you about, you know, what are your thoughts on the growth of the indie film industry?
I think it's at an incredible place, and I think it can only possibly grow because there's a balancing act happening. It's kind of like where a YouTube star like Lily Singh can now get a late night show on proper TV. But people are a bit, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, she was another one. Insecure, she was another one. You know, Issa Rae, exactly, who are making their name by creating their own content. So that's the first step. And you'll see a lot of these indie filmmakers also act in their films. They use it as a vehicle. That's one element of it. Instead of what I had said that frustrated me as a young actress straight out of university training, well, there are no roles for a young woman that I find appealing of what I'm being sent out for an agent and manager. It's all really terrible. so you create your own. Right. And as far as finances go, it used to be, well, sort of like the music industry, it used to be, yeah, well, you have to be scouted by an A&R person, you have to have a label, you have to have a big label, and that's the only way you're going to make it, right?
Right.
And now people can kind of do their own thing. They can not even have actual instruments. They can do it all from their laptop. Mm. They can tour that way. There's so much more you can do. And as a filmmaker, the options to do it on a budget with a lot of heart, you can get a camera that makes Hollywood quality looking films, you know, for an affordable enough price that it can be done. So some of the films I've seen today really are on par with bigger budget films because they're doing them right, you know, and then that's where creativity comes. We just watched the horror shorts, and what one of the filmmakers said was there was this really impressive pan that would have maybe cost $25,000 for a Hollywood budget to do, but instead it just took them a lot of time and cleverness to make the same effect without the CGI editing budget, whatever. So, you know, it's about being scrappy and creative.
That's interesting. So you feel like they are having, like, they may spend more time doing it, but it kind of evens out, you know?
It's time and money, and that was another thing that indie filmmakers have discussed, you know, that the challenge is a lot of people involved have day jobs or other sources of income, and a lot of the filmmakers can't even pay people or pay well. So you have to flip around with schedules, and you just have to be creative and make it work. But I think there's something about the desire to make it work and doing it that is more impressive than just, okay, I have an idea, but I don't have money or time, so I'm not going to do it.
Yes.
So particularly in places that are not known for being film centers of the world, it's really exciting to see, like, South Carolina, what kind of level of talent is coming out of here and inspiration, and that they're building. You have people who maybe aren't from here. There are a couple ladies from New York City, but they're bringing that New York spirit here and saying, well, this is our home now. We're making things happen here. So that's really cool.
Interesting. I'm glad you said that, too. Are you familiar with Omar Tyree?
That sounds familiar. Give me
a
name.
He's a major author of, back in like the 90s, early 2000s, he had a book called Fly Girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've heard of Fly Girl.
Okay, so he wrote that. He was just at a panel of authors I went to about a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
So it's one of my friends had it. It's called New Growth at Converse Space. It's a nice space called Converse Space. So anywho, he was there, and he's actually going to be he's going to be filming in Charleston. And he has a movie about a couple, and I can't remember the exact topic. Oh yeah, because the girl wants, they're a couple that are like, they've never had sex before, and he says that the movie kind of takes place in the car, mostly riding ground.
Yeah.
So, you know, I asked him, you know, what do you see in South Carolina where you would just choose this? And he was saying, number one, the trees, you know. He was like, you know, you're not going to get those trees anywhere else. And you know, think about the kind of film where all the work you have to do it, shoot somewhere in New York. It's so much free land out here.
Yeah.
And you can just do what you want. So I think he's going to be, you know, he's going to be looking for a Latino woman to play a role, an African-American guy to play the major roles. And I love that people are starting to really, like, see the value here.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing that I've discussed with Andrew, and what's exciting about what he's doing with that, speaking of land and building something instead of, LA and New York are very crowded. They're where it's at in a lot of ways, but Atlanta, they have the tax breaks and everything, but that doesn't apply to indie filmmakers.
Yeah.
It doesn't really actually matter. You don't get a tax break unless you are a multi-million-dollar production.
Oh,
it might be, sometimes it's $2 million, sometimes it's $5 million, but a lot of indie films are under $50,000. Some are just $5,000 budget, you know, some are more, some are less. And what Andrew is building, and what I think this community is striving to do, is be supportive of indie filmmakers at every level, but also just of indie filmmakers. So it's not about the tax breaks or things. Let's utilize what we got. And by being not a congested major city, there is a little more freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can probably shoot at an Airbnb house or somebody's backyard. You can be amongst the forest and
you can
trees
shoot a movie,
and everything.
I was looking at Pat Rutledge movie film earlier, Chase. Mm-hmm. Like, it's literally just riding around Columbia at night.
Well, right. You know, and so there you go.
No, it's not like a super populated city where you're not gonna, you know, be able to do it.
Right. I mean, that's not only not getting the tax cuts, but the permits and everything that has to be done. Mm-hmm. But it's great to see just there's so much need for content because there's so many content sites that there will always be something. And that's what the indie filmmakers have an advantage of now, because content is desired. So if you make it, they will come. Kind of.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you a question about what, I'm trying to see how do I frame this. What are ways people, maybe, you know, maybe I'm kind of in the dark. I'm more of a music person than a movie, but I love movies too. But where are people watching or purchasing indie films outside of, you know, things like Netflix and Hulu? Are there any smaller, more private ones that you know about?
Right. I mean, I know that it's sort of individual. Like, indie filmmakers can have their pieces out on Vimeo or something to share around. Yeah, yeah. So because they can upload their whole thing on it, they have the complete control. Mm-hmm. And that can be shared. And people can be informed about it that way. So that's a private thing. It is completely in your control. There are the sites like, of course, the streaming sites, Netflix and Hulu, and the big ones. And a lot of them are actually starting to go for the content of some of the smaller stuff. It's pretty impressive that it's becoming that. There are certain organizations that support these things. So, for instance, there's something called Seed and Spark.
Seed and Spark.
Okay. And it's an organization that supports indie filmmakers and has kind of a competition. So it's like crowdsourcing, but only for indie filmmakers.
Interesting.
And the Duplass brothers are actually involved with it. And, you know, they're Duplass.
Duplass.
D-U-P-L-A-S-S.
Okay.
Yeah, Jay and Mark. And they're, you know, huge, important TV and filmmakers. And they act as consultants. There's also, it's a competition, too. So there's a money prize that goes towards your making your film, but they teach you how to do it. So it's not just, here's the money prize, go for it.
Yeah.
They coach you through it. And I know somebody who won recently and for a film called Drought. And they looked at her script and said, this is $250,000 script. We can, if you want our notes, you take them, you can leave them. But we advise to make it more manageable and within budget.
Hmm.
Cut a few characters, cut a few scenes, change, you know, reduce the amount of locations, and you can build this a little more easily. So that, I think that kind of care and help. I know that the Hip Hop Film Festival that I mentioned, where I met Andrew last year, had their own kind of a streaming thing on their website.
Oh. That was another what was the name of that festival?
It was Hip Hop Film Festival.
Okay.
In New York.
So I should be able to Google
that. Yeah, very easily.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's female run and black run, and it's in Harlem, and it was at the Black Theater in Harlem, which is amazing. And so those are, again, all those stories and curated, and you get the sense of it really being that community spirit. But I think everyone's trying to find different ways to get it more out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Andrew's talking about distribution in certain ways, too. It's like with the music industry. There's no one way anymore.
Right.
That can be tough because that can water things down.
Yeah.
In some ways, and that can almost make it more challenging, but at the same time, it makes it a more even playing field.
Mm.
So you don't have to have a major studio as a musician, you know, major label or major studio as a filmmaker to do it, but then it's in your hands. And it's like writing a book. If you're self-publishing, you might not have as big of an audience, but the control is all yours. That's kind of the same thing.
Great, and I'm glad you mentioned the, you know, the women run and black run.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about women in the film industry. What opportunities do you see for women in the indie film industry versus, you know, the traditional way?
Right. Well, women have good stories, and I think it just comes down to what's your story. Is it good? And is the way that you're telling it good? It's the same thing in theater when people say, "Well, why?" You know, what's the key to success on Broadway? like take a Hamilton or something like that, for instance, a major phenomenon, it has to be of the zeitgeist, like a little bit ahead of the curve, but not too much. It has to fit in right with the time, not too much ahead, not too much behind, but right on and a little bit ahead. So not quite been done before, but right on that edge. It has to be good, because at the end of the day, the product has to be good. So it's not about that it is told by a woman or a person of color. That can be interesting, but it's a plus or negative either. Right. It's only based on, is the product good?
Right.
And I think that what it comes down to, the real challenge for everybody needs to be looking your project in the face and saying, is it good? Is it relatable? Is it meaningful to everybody? Like, I found the short film to be absolutely phenomenal. It was so simple. It was incredibly topical. This was about the two women from different backgrounds. One was wearing a white woman wearing Confederate shirt, the other wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt. And as it turns out, they're both going to the same place, which is Gay Pride. And they have a lot in common, and they have a shared history that is realized only after these opposites are forced to deal with each other on a bus. And it's so simple. It just takes place on a bus, but it's meaningful, it's sincere, and it's good. So again, I don't know what the budget was or anything like that, but it certainly wasn't a high special effects or anything like that. So if your stories are good, and remember, women are one of the biggest markets. So unfortunately, in the major motion picture world, so the studio world, let's talk again to bring up a Marvel or something, they'll say, oh, well, Wonder Woman made money, so I guess women are important in film. Well, Black Panther made money, so I guess Black people can bring money to the box office. We all know that's stupid.
Right.
But with indie filmmakers, they don't have to make decisions like that because they're not dealing with a round table of suits who are making those decisions and saying, well, what did the marketing, because as you know, I'm also a marketing director, you know, what do the numbers and demographics say about how much, you know, a rom-com makes, how much, if it's a Black movie, how much is that going to make? If it's a female-based, when they look at that and they say, okay, well, this isn't as important, because we all know that around the PG-13, male-centric films also are attended by people of color and women.
Right.
So whereas they could say, well, you know, you're cutting up the whole demographic that has money too if you're just focusing on a women or a Black story. Actually, no. So indie filmmakers, be they women, people of color, or anyone, have the power in their hands to say, I'm not going by demographic, I'm telling my story. And if it's authentic and if it's good, then it deserves to be out there.
And anybody could appeal to it regardless of their background. Not anybody.
Because, well, because they don't have to look on, we are pitching to this type of demographic, those are the numbers, and that's what we're dealing with. And, you know, what's nice to see in mainstream is you have things like, again, Wonder Woman, Crazy Rich Asians, Black Panther, where they are seeing, oh, guess what? Those are blockbuster hits. And they are featuring minorities or women or the groups that are usually not the target groups for big blockbuster hits.
Let me make sure we still record. Yeah. We've been going a long time. I love this stuff. You're so awesome. I wanted to ask you about marketing, because I saw marketing director. So what is the role of a marketer director as far as like the industry?
So mine is primarily with my live shows, but I also act as a consultant in general. And again, that is demographic based and targeted. So basically what I would do if I was being brought on as marketing director, either for one of my own shows, so I marketing direct all my shows, it's about branding. It's about building a brand around your product. So if it's your film, what's your visual? What's even down to the font that's being used? Every little detail is so important, but what's your brand? Who is your target demographic? Who's your second demographic? Who's your third? And then, of course, people say, and everybody, of course. But what are the trends in the market that will appeal? So if you are doing a horror and action film, how's that relating to the trends of the day? How is it cutting edge in a certain way? But, you know, how are you best selling your product? It's marketing is selling. So it's creating that also a focus on on goals. So if it's a goal of, for instance, in theater, when I tour shows and market direct them, if it's an international show, I'll brand it differently for the U.S. a little bit because we have different market tastes. Mm-hmm. And then differently per city. So let's say, okay, South Carolina, I've got that show coming from Africa, Drumstruck. Well, what may or may not appeal? Who's the demographic that would be firstly interested in African music? Mm-hmm. Secondly and third. So we've got the layers of, okay, let's go into the African-American community. This is about cultural spirit. This is about heritage and history. Then let's go, okay, this is about music. So who's the music lovers? How can we target them? Whether it's putting flyers up in all the music venues or something like that, going to music schools. And then the third, it's all ages. It's family friendly. So go into schools, go into churches, go into anywhere where that might happen. There's the grassroots marketing versus the advertising. And it's proven that grassroots is what works.
Word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Okay.